Three, two, one. Hello, world. And yes, we are back again. Finally done with our work. My name is Anglo. With me, I have Nike.
Hello.
And we have a good friend and guest, Kent Kershaw.
Hello, everyone.
So, how you guys doing today? It's the day after Christmas. Hope you guys had fun with your families.
Oh, I did.
Did you guys eat Greek food like Nike?
No, I had really dry turkey.
Who fucked that up? Was it grandma or was it mom?
Well, I don't want to put any of them under the bus, but let's just say that everyone avoided it.
Those little things are always funny on Thanksgiving. Like, someone brings a casserole and it's like, oh, this is interesting.
Oh my god, thank you. Skip that.
Yeah. Yeah, I had some good food, got some presents, you know, since I'm older now. Uncles and relatives and stuff, they just give me money now, which I prefer. I guess so I could be a good consumer. Because one thing I hated when I was...
Or you could save it.
Why would I do that?
I don't know. So you can break out of consumption.
Yeah. But anyways, I was just saying, because like when I was a kid and I was a very good consumer, I just hated when like my uncles or my aunts would buy me like toys, but I couldn't choose, you know, because they don't know my consumptive habits. They don't know what I desire, what brands I need, and that fit my personality.
The gift card really killed that.
Yeah. The gift card, the Amazon gift card. That's the new thing.
I don't think I've ever had a Amazon gift card. Maybe once, but no more than that.
Yeah, the gift card did for human interrelations. Oh, no. The gift card did for Christmas what Facebook did for human relations.
It's very, very true.
Yeah, because...
Like, think of birthday parties when you were still young, and it was the age of gift cards. I remember, you know, one year, one of my friends had his birthday party, and everybody gave him the same thing, which was a, you know, a $25 gift card to GameStop. And, like, by the end of it, just by my estimation, he had, like, over $100 to spend at GameStop. And to... You know, my child mind, that sounded freaking awesome.
Yeah, but once you get older, you appreciate the uniqueness of a picked out, curated gift from someone.
Yeah.
When you're a kid,
you know,
and you're a consumer.
Point where it's like, I don't know what I really want. I don't actively think I want anything because...
Yeah, because I don't
need
to.
You know, if I did think about something and realized I want it, I would just get it for myself.
Yeah, because you have a job or whatever, you have some source of income, but when you're a kid...
Yeah, you just have any sort of money.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like getting curated gifts, because instead of just... I mean, I do like the gift cards. It's a very general one, you know, like Amazon. But I do like the feeling of like, oh, I'll pick you, give you this book, for instance, or this, whatever. I think you really like it. It's like, oh, okay. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a ThinkPad, if you're really cool. I wish I got a ThinkPad for Christmas. I want to expand my ThinkPad collection. Kent, what do you think about ThinkPads?
If you're going to get a laptop, yeah, ThinkPad. At least they used to have their own little proprietary mouse in the center of the keyboard, which actually worked really well.
Yeah, yeah, the nipple.
Yeah, that thing is kick-ass, but I don't know if they make them like that same quality anymore. I haven't really had a laptop since college.
Yeah, so the quality is not as good as it used to be, but it's still miles above all the other laptops. Way better than like what you get from Apple, and they still have the nipple. My new T480 has the nipple, and I'm massaging it right now.
Well, speaking of that, I bought my mom a laptop for Christmas, and I set it up with her because she's, you know, she's a boomer, so these things, you have to walk their hand through it, and it crashed, like, the first time I let her put her hands on it after we set it up, and she looked
boomer
at me
energy.
Like, we need to, yeah, like, oh, it's broken, we need to return it. I said, Mom, this is Windows, this happened since the dawn of time, so I'm sorry, so
yeah.
You have to deal with it.
Did you put Fox News on her bookmarks?
No, she doesn't consume news, and even if she did, she'd misinterpret it. I mean,
what kind of boomer is she?
She's she just doesn't pay attention, you know. She is a union, you know, boomer. She's like, anything that touches a union, she'll like, you know, claws out. But other than that, you know, no, she doesn't really pay attention.
Well, that's
like, never voted. Union boomer, she's in a union or was in a union, or she's against unions?
She's been in a union lifelong. Like,
well, that's...
okay.
Yeah, she's like one of the few people that still has a manufacturing job in this country. And yeah, but, you know, neither of my parents are political. They never voted. So, you know, it's not like, you know, it's a political decision. It's more for her welfare.
Yeah, well, that's a lot better than the sort of Zio conservative boomer, I think.
Yeah, I wish I had a manufacturing job and never voted.
That's the life.
Yeah.
It's like two things that make your mom less gay than myself.
Yeah, she don't work in,
you know, I have no, there's like no possibility for a manufacturing job in my future. And I, you know, embarrassed to say that I have voted. So that's, yeah, that adds up.
I've only voted once. I wasn't old enough for the Obama election. I was fucking young as heck when that was going on. I don't want to cuss because this is a respectable podcast, motherfuckers. Anyways, I forgot what I was going to say, Nikkei.
Well, you were talking about, you know, not old enough to vote for Obama, but...
That's what I forgot.
But you voted afterwards?
Oh, yeah, I voted for Trump, of course. But now I'm right. Like...
You know, it's...
Now I'm just like, okay.
Not having a manufacturing job comes second, and, you know, the first gayest thing I've ever done is vote for Trump.
Oh, this is what I was going to say. You make fun of me. Dude, Nikkei makes fun of me for buying an iPad. But
I'll put that above voting for Trump as the gayest thing you've done.
But the thing is that Nikkei has had the Impossible Whopper twice. And the first time he went and got the Impossible Whopper, he called me up. And he's like, bro, I got the new Impossible Whopper. He eats it. And he's like, man,
live reaction.
This is amazing. Call ended.
I did not say it was amazing.
So that's pretty gay.
Well, I guess... In hindsight, based on the news, whether it's legitimate or not, I actually haven't confirmed. That came out this week, you know, screenshots spread on Twitter of the amount of estrogen supposedly within a single Impossible Whopper. You know, I've gone to my doctor today and said this now justifies being able to get a prescription for steroids, and I'm still waiting to hear my doctor agrees, but, you know, if I don't get my testosterone replaced by this, you know, poison that I've put into my body unwittingly, I'm going to, you know, move for legal action against the Burger King company.
Yeah, if you start instinctually going to pee sitting down, I would go see a doctor.
Yeah.
Really noted. I will, if that ever starts to happen, I'll make note of it and add that to my case file.
I pee sitting down.
My name, you start getting randomly cold.
Yeah, it's like when you're driving, you tell a person driving, hey, can you switch it to the temp, can you make it hotter, and then like 10 minutes later, can you make it colder, sorry, no, it's a little,
yeah. Figure out where I want to eat anymore.
Oh god. Yeah, and when you make, and when the person you're with makes a decision, you're like, no, I don't want that.
Oh, it's too spicy.
You can't ever decide where to go. You have to always ask someone else.
But, so, Kent, tell me about yourself. What do you do?
I work very simple job. So, you know, I literally have time to just browse TRS all day and, you know, catch up with the news. So it works out for me. And, you know, I discovered all the podcasts in around 2015 because of Meraku. He was putting all his songs on YouTube, and I found his libertarian song, Black and Yellow. And I went from that. I found his Merchant Minute songs on YouTube, and then I was like, oh, what's that? I want to see more Merchant Minute. And he mentioned The Daily Show in one of them. And I found the blog.
Nazball.
Yep.
Yeah. It's kind of similar to me. I didn't get into Meraku for his like libertarian stuff, but it was, I think, the Normie song or something like that. I'm not quite sure. The Normal Fag song. Yeah, might have been even earlier than that. I don't know which one it was, but it was Meraku that said that got me into TRS. Yeah, around the same time, maybe. Wait, no. When did we start the podcast? 2015? I don't remember. I don't remember anything. Time has been compressed.
Yeah, it has. I mean, was the forum still up back then? Because I remember the first irritation. I barely got into it before everything went crazy.
Yeah, the we started on the forum, the first forum. That's how the podcast started. I don't know what year that was.
They need to bring back groups. Whatever happened to that?
Yeah, that was fun.
Everyone had their little clan, and there was like little wars between them.
You had the Orthodox, you had the Prots, you had the people from like Minnesota, their own group or whatever the fuck. I don't know.
Yeah. Why won't they support a decision that causes infighting?
Yeah. Dude, that's miserable. I want some more infighting. No, I don't. That's like the last thing I want.
Yeah, no. Leave that behind.
Yeah, but do you do something, Kent? Does she have a podcast or is that still?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I haven't done some. You know, the holidays have slowed me down, but I do a little informal thing on SoundCloud. What's up, Nikkei?
You don't say. We wouldn't know anything about that here.
Yeah. Well,
I think it's been like 3 weeks since we uploaded our last episode. Probably.
I'm sure everybody gets a chance to listen.
Yeah. So if you want to see it, just go on down SoundCloud. It's called Raw Blogs with Kent Kershaw. And I try to keep it around 10 minutes. I don't like wasting people's time. Yeah. And I
you're a man of after our own heart, because we try to keep it like an hour.
Yeah. Who wants to listen to like 2 hours of some fucking nobody? Like, that's not how you get people into your thing. Sorry.
Yeah. See, that as if, you know, most podcasters don't start out with several hour long screeds that have nothing to do with the stated topic.
I don't think TYH ever really went beyond 2 hours. I think like once we did, but we always stayed relatively short. Yeah, I think that's kind of been our gimmick, along with being young, quote unquote.
Yeah, I mean, Impossible Burger, you guys all had all that energy, and, you know, but then, you know, 2019 hit.
Yeah, that shit really hit hard.
The wall. I think we can, you know, safely declare that we hit the wall at the end of this year, this decade. Yeah. And, yeah, we're like, you know, a woman crossing into her, you know, after her bloom.
We are now spinsters.
God.
Yeah, we are now the spinster podcast.
Oh, I refuse. We must not give in to the spirit of our times. We must rise above it.
Like Henry Rollins, we must rise above, rise above. You guys want to know something, audience? Henry Rollins, the coolest guy in punk rock, covered the Black Flag song Rise Above with Cyndi Lauper, of all people. If you want to see how cool Henry Rollins is, watch that. Isn't that pathetic?
Yeah,
it's
should've
like,
just stuck to wrestling.
I mean, I do like, okay, I, you know, I'm a big fan of a lot of alternative experimental music. Call me a degenerate, you know, but at least like with Black Flag, you kind of like, they were sort of underground, going against like mainstream culture. But then you have in the 80s, but now you have like Henry Rollins, you know, covering a Black Flag song with like one of the most mainstream people of like the early 80s, Cyndi Lauper. Kind of odd. I don't know.
Yeah. It's Cyndi a little Whopper. Weird.
Well, here's the thing. I don't mind. Like, I gotta admit, like, some 80s pop was pretty good, especially like the stuff like influenced by like post-punk and stuff like New Order and Depeche Mode. I love those bands. But like stuff like Cyndi Lauper, that stuff's gay, you know. It's not interesting. And
for its time, it was fine. I mean, it wasn't anything extremely special, but
yeah,
it wasn't awful. Yeah. It was just average.
What, are you talking about Depeche Mode?
No, Cyndi Lauper.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I know, yeah. It wasn't like the thing with like Depeche Mode or New Order. It's like it was, oh, this stuff, okay, it can be consumed by the general population, but it's also interesting and has sometimes good lyrics. Not really with New Order, but good stuff, good instrumentation. It was unique, you know, but Cyndi Lauper is just like, okay, this is just average. And I feel like that's kind of like what Black Flag was going against.
A good word to describe Henry Rollins as average, except he just makes everything sound intense that he does.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, because Black Flag sucked after he went in. Like, when Black Flag was really good, it was like the first EP, or the first few things that they made with this guy's named Keith Morris. He ended up playing in the Circle Jerks. I know Nikkei laughs at that name, but...
Yes.
But yeah, that's like that stuff was actually like really good, and just, oh, this is from 1977, and this is this aggressive. Wow, that's pretty crazy. But like Henry Rollins is just like, he's famous due to the legacy created by the other Black Flag frontmen, you know. He only joined later. And it's like, ugh.
Yeah, well, you can tell where he's at in life because a lot like Kevin Smith, his career doesn't consist of doing what he started out doing. He just does these talks in front of crowds about the old days.
And spoken word.
Yeah, like he just tells stories, the same stories over and over. So like that, you're done. All right, you're done. Bye.
Yeah. I do admit, I think Henry Rollins, even though he's kind of lame, I think he's kind of up to, you know, up to snuff when it comes to a lot of, he knows a lot of the new music going on and avant-garde stuff, but that Cyndi Lauper thing is pretty gay. But, yeah, were you ever into that kind of music, Kent?
No, I don't. I know my girlfriend calls me weird for it, but like I don't really have a music like dick or not dick, tick. Like I don't like I don't have a feel for music except for very little. Like I love Iron Maiden and I love some stuff from like the Jackass, Viva La Bam, like early 2000s days, like Bloodhound Gang and Blink 182. But you know, beyond that, I don't really get invested.
That's like my least favorite stuff is that early 2000s stuff. I don't know why. That's like one generation I just can't stand.
It gives me the good feels. I mean, I'm not going to claim it's great music, but I can bang my head to it, you know. But I don't know. It's just I stopped, you know, aging my music interest in like 2005.
Oh, wow. Yeah, for me, I've always been into like weird stuff, kind of hipster, pretentious, noise, experimental stuff. Probably not Hyperborean, but yeah. What about you, Nikkei? Do you like the early 2000s music?
I don't think so. I think in the early 2000s, I was listening to music from the late 90s that was on the radio.
You know what song's good? You know, there occasionally there is that pop song that is pretty good. There was this one song that I like. I heard it when I was a kid, and I liked it then, and I still like it now. It's from, I think they're called The New Radicals. What's that song?
You only get what you give.
Yeah.
Don't give up. Have you seen a music video for that? He's wearing that like wide-rimmed fishing hat that every kid hat. Wore in high school. Yeah.
Yeah, he's wearing the young lean bucket hat, and it's funny. Yeah. I don't know why, but that song gives me good feels. I think it's like the piano chord progression. It's very open and just like, oh gosh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and it has hope for the future. Like they didn't know what was going to happen. They didn't see our future. They didn't see the D-Trans Reddit.
Oh yeah. So what's this D-Trans Reddit?
It looks like just a bunch of people like trying to take comfort in the fact that they had made a horrible fucking mistake, but they're not saying it out loud. And it's just like, will testosterone that I took for 3 years, you know, make me not have a baby anymore? Or like, well, am I infertile? And just tell me it was okay. And it's just it's really egregious because there was no warning for these people. No one was allowed to say, you know, you're basically making a giant mistake. You're fucking up.
Yes. And so
it's like a graveyard of souls, of young souls. That's all it is.
So this D-Trans subreddit is something that Kent found. It's people talking about their detransitioning from transgenderism, I guess. And it goes on to the general idea that I think a lot of these people are just, I think they call them trans trenders. They're on it for a trend. And then once they realize there are some actual like biological ramifications, like consuming testosterone when you're a female or, you know, the other way around, that's not good for you and your mental health. And they're like, oh shit, this is a bad trend. And they're detransitioning.
Yeah, what's worse is like the ones where the parents are talking about, like, what do they do? Because they can't just say, they can't just like, you know, knock them over the head and say quit. Like they have to go through this moral paradigm of like, it's okay, yet I don't want you to do it, yet I can't say that.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, so the hard thing about I have to imagine one of the hardest things about dealing with the psychology of, you know, people like under this delusion is that if they're given access to these pills, then they're filling themselves up with basically, you know, nega puberty round two. And that's like fucking up with their ability to think rationally and keep it together emotionally.
Yeah, that's.
There's no talking sense to people like that.
And it doesn't even take that anymore. I mean, pretty soon this, you know, explosion in these trans things, we're going to see a lot more of that because people's, just by virtue of the things we consume, like Impossible Whoppers or, you know, everything else, testosterone levels are plummeting. And people are easily suggestive when they're vulnerable and they have, you know, the only one ideology is given to them. And that's like the ideology of consumption and just, you know, acceptance of everything. Like there's no fine line. There's no, you know, nothing is inherently wrong. Everything is accepted. And it's just a moral.
It's extreme novelty seeking.
Yeah. It's like, what can I do to seem unique and special every day? Like at least Henry Rollins pressed the pause button on his edge and he's, you know, living his teenage years.
He didn't like,
but, I mean, even, you know, Henry Rollins is now blasé.
Yeah.
I mean, if he wanted to stay relevant, he would
cut his cock off.
Yeah.
Henry Rollins, cut off your cock if you want to be cool. Yeah, it's like this transgender stuff is really interesting because I heard of this thing. I didn't know it existed, but someone on Twitter brought it up. And unfortunately, there's some pictures. There's like a eunuch fetish.
I wonder how long that lasts before you realize it fucked up.
Basically, these people, they have a fetish where they get off on the idea of not having genitals. And so eventually, if it's very severe, they'll just cut their own cock off. Not to transition, but just not to have a penis.
Isn't a fetish, it's a mental illness.
Well, yeah, it's mental illness, of course. But the thing is, that's crazy, is a lot of these people will do these procedures at home. And they have, like...
Well, yeah, because no, like, ethical...
Yeah, yeah.
Medical professional would be willing to do such things.
Yeah, but it's just crazy that they go through with this, and I think they have... There are, like, forums where they talk about methods on how to do this at your own home, and as safely as possible... You know, they like it's really the oddest thing out there.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah. I'm starting to become more Pine Gang now because, as we were talking about earlier, because of the internet, this would never be written down in a book. Like, imagine, like, in the 1800s, like guides on, you know, DIY, you know, dick cutting off guides. It wouldn't. They got pictures and everything.
Tis how you cut off your dick.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. From H.P. Pondberry.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. And the internet acts as an echo chamber where if you have some weird peculiarity, you can find other people that have that same weird peculiarity and you can talk and then there's a feedback loop where you guys reinforce each other. Whereas back in the 1800s, if you wanted to cut your cock off, maybe you would do it, but no one would know about it and you couldn't find anyone else that would want to do it too, you know?
Yeah. And what's great is like when
you'd also probably die.
Yeah, do that too.
Like, yeah, but at least you chose it. Like when social media is talking about reducing harm, they're never talking about this. They're talking about someone saying nigger. Like, yeah. I can't understand how they can just like pass over that and go straight to the guy that's just trying to make a funny joke.
Yeah, it's either, you know, how to safely unicize yourself or like, you know, take how fentanyl.
How to police yourself from hate speech.
It's not even that. Like, the harm reduction is, like, it's either something, like, sexually mutilating or drug-related.
Well, those people are good consumers. Racists aren't. They're cheap.
Yeah. It costs $0 to say the N-word.
But what if we could monetize it?
Hey, that's what we're doing.
I'd be against it.
That's what TDS did.
I don't know. Yeah, see?
I'm an Alabama nigger, and it's got to be free.
Yeah, see, Sven woke up to this a long time ago, and he cornered the market.
Yeah.
I will, I won't sell out.
Yeah.
I will not try to copyright the N-word.
I tip my hat to your principles.
Well, someone
otherwise,
might...
you're going to have to pay up every time you say nigger.
Yeah.
You know how much debt I would be in?
Oh, Jesus. You'd have to take out a few loans. Your credit would be in the shitter.
Oh, look at this.
Don't let the Jews know that I'd have to get a loan just to speak.
Yeah, and we all know racists can't get, you know, racists and banks, they don't go together.
Hey, yo, I Am Jazz, new season.
So is this post-explosion?
This is what the article says. Jazz Jennings has a harrowing third surgery.
Well, you know, you're basically committed though, right? I mean, you can't go back.
No, dude.
I mean, why do they use the term harrowing? It sounds like it's gotten even worse.
It's not for her, it's for the doctor. He's going in.
The doctor has, like, it's PTSD afterwards.
To have his eyeballs removed.
Yeah. He comes home and drinks. He's just, I don't know anymore.
His eyes and his hands.
Well, the thing is,
fully removed.
Talks about how Jazz, who identifies as pansexual, also found her first boyfriend, Amir. And talks about how Amir's mom is not actually as accepting as I thought she would be. That's Amir talking about. But yeah, it's like, bruh, we talked
about.
Your
mom is right.
We talked about this, yeah. I think, like a few months ago. It's like, bruh, Amir's mom is correct.
I want to see Amir's internet history, because if he's that young, already into, you know, trans, there's something going on there.
Yeah, and his name's Amir. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, I think Amir might be into a lot more things than just, you know, trannies.
Does he have like a foreign last name, or is he like an American name?
Let's see. Jazz. I'm doing Google. Jazz Jennings. Amir. Let's see what his name is. Amir Stewart.
Yeah. He's just an American black.
Yeah. But anyways, like, Amir has a shirt that says, has three boxes that you can check. Boy, girl. And the third one's checked, and it says me. So he's neither boy or girl, nor girl. He's me.
So he's a fag too.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
No shit.
God, dude. I bet he doesn't live around black people. Hey. There's no way.
Yo, I want to say something gross. Listen.
There's a reason why you don't hear about his father's disapproval.
Yo, listen to this. What if that third surgery is because Amir tried to get with the...
Oh, no, don't finish that thought. Oh, please.
Hey,
literally going to throw up.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. I can feel it building in my stomach right now.
God, so did Jazz.
I'm actually genuinely feeling nauseous.
Is the whole season going to be in the hospital? Because isn't this just like, you're just trying to patch this thing together so it doesn't fall apart?
Wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. But I'm not, you know, don't wait up for me to tell you how it turns out. I won't watch. Jesus, not going to start. I'll just let people on TDS tell me how it goes.
Yeah, I don't even know.
I'm sure Alex McNabb will have plenty to say.
Plenty of details.
Medical professional.
They'll talk about it for like an hour about what happens.
This is what happens.
Is it though? Is this really what happens?
Yes, it is! Look at
around
you.
Is this just like a damn like fluke of our place and time? Like, is this really what happens?
What do you mean by that? This is what's happening now. It's what's happening now.
Well, this thing only sort of just happens today. This, you know, you couldn't say that's what happens 20 years ago. Because it feels
like we're in a bad Star Trek episode where they didn't fix the timeline and it just kept getting worse.
It's like, you know, you say that's what happens as if this was a predictable outcome, as if anybody could have seen this coming.
Oh, well, it's just the logic of...
Nobody saw this coming. Nobody thought, you know, yeah, this is how it's going to end up. This is exactly what's going to happen. Maybe people had dystopic predictions of the future, but nothing quite specifically like this.
Well, because it's not like out and out totalitarianism. Is that what you're...
I mean, that's a whole nother question altogether. It's just like this particular Eldritch Horror.
Because
honestly, you know, giving it too much distinction, this is just a... disgusting mess. It's fully comprehensive. You'd rather not.
Maybe Lovecraft was seeing visions of this feature, and the only way he could possibly describe it
was incomprehensible to him in his time.
He's talking about tentacles and open maws with teeth, and he just like,
just the vision of Jazz Jennings.
Yeah, he got a sneak preview of the fourth season.
Might be onto something, my friend.
And what he found out won't surprise you.
Hmm.
All right, we're back from our break. And you guys know that we're big fans of campus reform because they are objective and they really care about free speech. But when it comes to our favorite tribe, they do not support any hate speech, which is why they are very pro Trump's new executive order against campus anti-Semitism, and they wrote an article about it.
Yes.
Let's take this thing written down.
Written by two authors, one of which we always go to her well, Ms. Celine Ryan, and her more diverse co-author, Frances Floresca.
Mm.
And, I guess she's credited as the primary author. You know, I guess diversity is strength over at campus reform in terms of writing output on such a esteemed and reverent topic, so close to the core of campus reform's message. But
so let's read the first two bullet points that summarizes it, and maybe we could find some other paragraphs that are interesting. But this summarizes the whole article. President Trump announced plans to sign an executive order targeting anti-Semitism by cutting off funding to colleges that do not combat discrimination toward Jewish students. Critics are concerned that the order will stifle free speech. One college alumna responded that Jewish students have been assaulted and that the administration takes the side of the perpetrators, meaning the university administration. That's very badly worded, because that gives one the interpretation that they're talking about the Trump administration.
It does.
But this is what happens when you have like sophomores as your authors on your, as your journalists on your website.
Well, I certainly hope she wasn't paid for this.
It probably was.
Probably was, but more just a stipend for her whole contributions for the semester. Who knows? I'm actually curious what kind of compensation they get for writing on campus reform.
What's interesting, if we want to go straight to the article, that the justification for this anti-Semitism bill was the title for the Civil Rights Act of 1984, which allows the U.S. Department of Education to withhold funding from schools that discriminate against people on the basis of, quote, race, color, or national origin. Trump's order to recognize people of Jewish heritage as having their own national origin or ethnicity, effectively including them within the groups protected by Title IV. So that's the justification for this.
And if you recall, the immediate phony outrage over this was that the New York Times described this as creating Jewish as a nationality.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it prevents you from complaining about things that are real or imagined. So, you know, anyone saying it doesn't reduce speech is bullshit to you. Like, real. If something did happen, but you blame Israel for it as a whole, that's legal now.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's just so frustrating because people will, and they always do this, they'll take the least charitable and, you know, most sensical explanation of what this actually is, and then interpret it in a way where they can pretend to be outraged about it because there's some nebulous premise of it being pejorative or discriminatory in some way. And because on its face, there's no reason why Jews should be upset that Jewish would be considered a nationality, if that's what it did explicitly. But it's not explicitly that. It's basically just giving religion the same protected category status as race, color, or national origin. The uncharitable thing about the New York Times headline is that it picks national origin, but they could have said it defines Judaism as a color. And it's equally as valid a premise, or at least an interpretation, but it's also equally shit as an interpretation. It's just done selectively because it can be used for outrage as opposed to absurdity, because it would be absurd to say, and it would be plainly absurd to say, it defines Judaism as a color. Well, you can't get angry about that because it just sounds silly. But there's this fake notion about having Jewish as a nationality as some, you know, Hitler shit that pisses me off so bad, because it's just like, It's nowhere close to that. It's the exact opposite in intent and in effect.
Well, the Jews' whole arguments and everything they throw at you really, it relies on ambiguity. Without that, they couldn't get away with half the stuff they do. And Americans' understanding of like Jewishness is so binary. It's either you are Jewish or you aren't. I thought it was religion. I thought, you know, it's not a race until something is, you know, said to them, and then it becomes racist. So, oh, you're racist. Well, I thought I was just being against religion. And they'll do that with Islam. If someone gets on them for making fun of Islam, they'll go, well, it's just a religion. But they won't do that for Jews. If I make a Jew joke, they don't have that distinction. They're like, oh, you're racist.
Right. Well, as a matter of fact, some of these Jews will get on your case for criticizing Islam. Because they can't let the Goyim do it. It's not okay when you do it.
Speaking of that, did you look at the article and how much time they give the Zionist Organization of America spokesman as compared to the BDS spokesman? The BDS guy literally gets one sentence in the rest of the article.
How about we get into it?
That's good.
All right. So, according to the New York Times, the definition that will be employed by the State Department was originally created by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance and indicates, quote, a certain perception of Jews which may be expressed as hatred towards Jews. While some consider the executive order to be a positive move to protect civil liberties, others have expressed concerns that it will chill free speech and be used to silence any criticism of Israel. Executive Director of the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, Youssef Mounir, said that the order is part of a concerted effort to silence the Palestinian rights activism by blurring the lines between anti-Semitism and criticism of Israel. Quote, Israeli apartheid is a very hard product to sell in America, especially in progressive spaces, and realizing this, many Israeli apartheid apologists, Trump included, are looking to silence a debate they know they can't win, Youssef said. This order comes just days after Trump condemned the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions campaign, also known as BDS, while speaking at the Israeli-American Council National Summit. Quote, I want to be very clear that my administration vigorously condemns the BDS campaign against Israel. But sadly, BDS has also made disturbing headways on American college campuses, Trump said. Trump also invited New York University alumna Adela Kojab to speak about how her school, quote, failed to protect its Jewish community from ongoing harassment, including attacks on social media, student government resolutions, boycotts, and burning flags. Oh, God.
Oh, God.
So someone cut them in line, basically. There was no actual violence. It just stopped them from doing something quicker.
The physical assaults ended in two arrests, and the university didn't stand idly. Instead, they gave an anti-Israel hate group the Presidential Service Award, the highest honor you could receive as a group on campus, Kajab said. I was notified my case was accepted by the Department of Education. An investigation has been launched against NYU for failure to protect this community.
Yeah, this
also stated that students in the audience should not be afraid to stand up, and that as an immigrant from Mexico City, that she is thankful to live in a country where the Office of Civil Rights, quotes, takes the concerns of Jewish students seriously. Unlike Mexico, who just, you know, lets it all fly, right?
Well, they draw the line at, you know, insulting Jews. Cartels, look the other way.
I mean, of all the things to care about, it's like, I'm glad I'm in America, where at least you can't say anything bad about Jews, compared to Mexico, where it's like, you know, people are getting killed by cartels in the parts of Mexico City that aren't controlled by the government. It's like, wouldn't you be more appreciative of that fact? No, it's the fact that I'm protected from anti-Semitism. That's what makes America better than Mexico.
The next three sentences are rather interesting. It gets very interesting, the third one. The Zionist Organization of America is responsible for the original victory, making sure that Jewish students on campus are protected under Title IV. NYU alumni...
Title VI.
Or Title VI, sorry. NYU alumni and current Tri-State Campus coordinator for the ZOA, Marlene Arthoff, told campus reform. She said that this executive order is meaningful on several levels, including that Jewish students have the right to be protected under Title IV, and that being Jewish is not simply a religion, but we are in fact a people.
Mm.
This helps dispel extremely anti-Semitic myths like the Holocaust happened to white people, or religions
Wait.
Don't...
So you're not white anymore?
Yeah.
Like, put that in the bill. I'll be happy to pass it.
Or don't, religions don't have self-determination, she said.
I wonder how Polacks feel about this.
Yeah, no, ooh. Mm. Yeah.
So Christians can, you know, push their way through people. Oh, no, wait. Everything has to be 50-50 when Christians enter the conversation.
Polacks black now?
Well, she says that this, the concerns regarding free speech are misguided. I do not see it that way. Individuals and students still have opportunities to debate and protest and speak their minds. They can say whatever they want to say. However, the order is saying that the government will not support universities that do not keep the Jewish students safe. Jewish students have been physically assaulted on campus, and the administration often takes the side of the perpetrators.
Because you're lying.
It's not about speech, it's about action. It's not about disallowing criticism of Israel. It's about the physical safety of Jewish students and making sure that administrations take it seriously.
Well, they consider their physical safety at risk when you mention Israel in a negative light.
Yeah, that's because yeah. I don't know of any university where Jews have been attacked. I mean,
yeah. Aside from by themselves.
Yeah, and if they are being attacked by like anti-Israel activists, there's a big chance maybe some of those are Jews too. I mean, we all know that. The very far left of the Jews. I mean, there is kind of a transition where this isn't being as, it's not as important as it used to be, but there is, you know, a vocal group of anti-Israel Jews who view Israel as like an expansion of European colonialism, you know, and that's why they hate it.
So, I, you know, have to remind everybody of the existence of a Canary Mission. You guys remember that?
It sounds familiar. I kind of forgot what that was.
It's like the official docs archive of anybody who's ever criticized Israel in an American university and publicly.
Oh, wow.
Canary in a coal mine, more like kike in a tunnel.
Yeah. It's run and funded anonymously.
By anonymous.
And it exposes anti-Semitism, which is just anybody who's ever said anything good about Palestine once on record. Or even allegedly, they will have their docs.
Well, there's one
on
guy.
Website.
One of their professors is Eric Scheifetz. That's got to be a Jew.
Mm. This next paragraph that he's talking about, he says the magic C word. Want to read that one off?
Let's see where this one's at.
The president's order.
The president's order codifies a definition of anti-Semitism established by the State Department under President Obama. It strikes directly at the thinly veiled bigotry against Jews in Israel that has been institutionalized on college campuses. Claiming this chills speech, or this chills free speech, is a canard.
A canard!
There is no more an attack on free speech than the policies used by federal government during the civil rights era to end the open discrimination of African Americans by college campuses receiving federal dollars, said a Syracuse University student, Justine Murray. Said... Fact is, Jews in the state of Israel stand alone in being the only people in the nation whose legitimacy is freely attacked. Hey, you know how often, like, our legitimacy as white people in North America is attacked constantly?
That's well. How about the practical thing?
I wanted to get here. Only the state of Israel is alone in being the only people in nation whose legitimacy is freely attacked.
Well, you know who.
I don't think you've been on a campus for very long, have you, bud?
You know whose national legitimacy is freely attacked? Palestinians by you guys.
Yeah. Syrians, Iranians, Venezuelans.
Yeah, it makes no sense, and it's not even just like North America. Extends to Australia because it's a settler colonialist state, but even places in Europe, like they,
and, yeah, Cheddar Man, Britons have always been black.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, so why are you complaining? It's just a piece of paper. That's all citizenship is. Oh, really? Okay. That's well, funny. Let's do that for Israel.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. People think. I mean, European lands are constantly being delegitimized, and they don't have. any. They cannot self... there's no self-determination is allowed in Europe anymore because it's racist. It's bigoted. Even a place like Poland, which doesn't have, like, pretty much any history regarding colonialism, even they can't have self-determination. You know what I mean? It's... it's odd. It's really...
I love how they put it at the bottom. Will you help expose liberal bias on America's campuses? This entire article is biased, you know, for like they just have that hole in their view for everything Jew. It's just you turn your head off.
Yeah, this is and this gets me so mad because she talks about being undermined daily in academic life. The thing is that European nations and especially settler nations, but even the non-settler nations are always being questioned and attacked in academia constantly.
How many Palestinians are on the school board? They must have a lot of influence in that school, Syracuse University.
Yeah, I wonder like how much of the alumni association and all of its donor base is Palestinian in origin.
Kids are just walking the halls afraid to talk about Gaza in a bad way.
I wonder how many buildings on their campus is named are named after Palestinian people.
This they is not.
They look over their shoulder before supporting Israel.
Yeah. You know, this is the Mahmoud Abbas Theater for the Performing Arts.
The Mahmoud Ahmadinejad School for Holocaust
Biological,
Research.
Chemistry Lab.
The Assad Chemistry Department.
Just statues of goats everywhere.
Isn't that about debates on the policy of Israel? This is about the open, accepted use of anti-Semitic tropes, myths, stereotypes, and propaganda by academics on the left, as well as the right, and the lack of resolve in America until now to do anything about it. Justine Murray added. I don't really know if many, like, right... if there are any, like, right-leaning academics are gonna be Zio-cucks. They're gonna be, like, Jordan Peterson or something like that.
I mean... it said it right in the second to last paragraph. They're claiming this chills free speech is a canard.
Yeah, it's a stereotype.
Like, it's just, you know, to say that it does what you don't want it to do, that's a canard. It's not true. Well, the thing that you don't want, like about it is can't be. It's just a racist trope.
Yeah, like your speech. Well, I believe in free speech. That is, I believe that there should be no regulations on speech. Except when your speech... involves these sentences, you know, it's like...
I would like to also point out that the co-authoress, Ms. Celine Ryan, in her Twitter bio, it says journalist, and then hashtag 1A absolutist, meaning First Amendment. Well, you don't really seem to show the same absolution when, you know, the freedom to criticize the state of Israel comes up, do you, Celine?
Mm. We're not punishing you, but there's, you know, what do they always say? That you have freedom of speech, but not freedom of consequences from that speech. Like, that's their cope on that. Mm. Used to be a left-wing thing to say, but now, you know, every conservative says that too. Like,
I mean, even that
conservatives
premise can't hold
suck
under
Let
this circumstance, because what they're saying is there are things you can say that are mean enough to deny your college federal funding.
That's how they're getting away. They're just like, oh, it's not a... but they're saying, like, you can still do that as a student. You just can't be a part of a group. Yeah, but I can guarantee you if they catch you saying anything that, you know, that offends this bill, you're not going to be a student for long anyway.
I mean, look at the difference between what they're saying, oh, this is what they're praising this for stopping, and what it's supposedly going to do. What it supposedly is about is withholding funds from schools for discrimination. Well, publishing things that are anti-Semitic isn't discrimination.
And the complaints weren't discrimination either. In the beginning of the article, there was no discrimination.
Yeah,
sure. There was just them getting annoyed.
Yeah,
it was
discrimination
them being called
like,
out.
The discrimination would entail the university say, oh, you're a Jew, you're not allowed in this university.
You know, yeah. As an institution.
Yeah, no.
This isn't being treated differently as an institution. This is just you being somebody who is criticized by other people at the same location. You know, you're all part of the same institution, but that's not the institution systematically targeting you. It is you just being somebody who defends bad things. and then getting backlash for it.
Yeah.
That's not discrimination. That's feedback. That's just part of, you know, interacting with other people.
Yeah, it prevents the use of anti-Semitic tropes, stereotypes, propaganda. Okay, but what about against Palestine? Like, is that not a trope and a canard to say Palestine is just trying to destroy Israel all the time? I mean, they've tried to do the two-state solution and stuff. Like, I don't really give a fuck about these people to begin with, but if it, you know, Israel's, you know, their activity alone just rolls your stomach. But, you know, they can say whatever they want about everyone else and all their enemies and all the people trying to so-called, you know, question their legitimacy, which, you know, if your legitimacy was written by a piece of fucking paper by a committee that isn't even Jews, like, you don't have legitimacy. You were just given it. Like, you didn't even fight for your own land. But still, like, it's just... their entire race is a canard.
Their whole race is an anti-Semitic trope.
Yeah, like
the
just
real Jew?
Their
you're
faces.
Mourning, you ain't mourning.
No, their face literally is a canard. You're not allowed to like draw it because if you like, remember, didn't someone get in trouble for drawing a Jewish profile and like people noticing it's Jewish? Like their entire face just screams, you know, stereotype.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, if you draw a Jew and he looks like a Jew, that's anti-Semitic.
Yeah. Oh, you took a picture and my hooked nose stood out. Well, it's kind of there.
Yeah, you can't help you get that big old thing right there.
Yeah, there isn't an airbrush program good enough to, you know, clean that up.
That bump, man. I'm sorry. We can't remove that on that nose. That just like, you know how it's like, it's literally hooked. But like, it's not even hooked. It's like at an angle. It's like a sharp angle sometimes. Have you seen that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, that's why nose job, I always thought about this. Why were nose jobs always mentioned in, like, 90s movies? You know, you ever seen, like, a Cosmopolitan, like, city movie?
Jews.
Yeah, they were all Jewish. They're all trying to blend in.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. No, it's...
I've seen some interesting profiles here on Canary Mission.
What?
Well, they have a profile, the dossier here on one Tony Hovater.
What? He's not a professor?
I'll just read the overview here. Tony Hovater engaged in violence, citation needed, alongside anti-Semitic protesters in Charlottesville in 2017. He has promoted Hitler. Wow, I'm sure Hitler really appreciated it. I guess Hitler just got a pay raise thanks to Tony.
He's been needing some good PR lately.
I mean, he gave him a promotion. And how about that? He must be really good at his job. he has spread anti-Semitism. I wonder where. It's like on toast? Meaning? demonized Israel on social media. Well, that one's pretty straightforward.
And they don't put sources for this. They just have these little articles like the SPLC.
Well, they have like highlighted words that are hyperlinked to whatever the source is for each little claim here. So, like in the first sentence, they have the word engaged, and it's a link to a tweet from user account Trump Smasher. I'm just looking at the URL, but that's the username. That's their source for engaged in violence. Is a Trump Smasher from Twitter. Promoted is a Gab post. Spread is a Gab post, and demonized a Gab post. Hovater was a leader, which is hyperlinked to the SPLC, of the Traditional Worker Party, which is linked to the ADL. They really, really firing on all cylinders here with the sourcing, who co-hosted the Traditional Youth Hour podcast on Radio Stormer, the internet radio channel of alt-right website Daily Stormer, which is hyperlinked to the actual dailystormer.name. Talk about not doing yourself any favors. Linking straight to the Stormer. Bold move. Hovater ran hyperlinked to totalwar-arwikia.com/wiki/Tony Hovater. Ran as a candidate for the city council of New Carlisle, Ohio, and then a wiki for Ohio, as in just an article about the state, as if we needed a source proving the existence of Ohio. In November 2017, Ovidio was fired, hyperlinked to New York Times from his job
at a cook. And then, you know, I guess the same article published is hyperlinked again. I don't know. It has a whole section here under infamous quotes, which the first one says, quote, "I'd rather promote a united front against the Jews." Okay.
Sounds good.
It's very infamous.
It's a hot take.
This is a quote, "If Jew-loving boomers and race-mixing leftists hate you, then you're objectively correct with your understanding of the world." Pretty good. That's a little bit more infamous. But then you get something like, "Talmudic law is literally evil." All right. That's not really infamous. It's just... Oh,
yeah, I mean, that's opinions. It's not even a canard or anything. It's just an opinion, which is, you know, falls under free speech and debate, right? Campus reform, that's part of the thing we're trying to promote.
I think, I have to say, though, in terms of, like, quote number one listed on his article by Canary Mission, one Matthew Heimbach has him beat. His number one infamous quote is, "Listen, Kike, you hate Kodrianu for the same reason you hate Hitler or Dr. Goebbels. They fought against people like you. National Socialism is the only ideology that can fight back against your rootless international clique. I don't care if you're a conservative or liberal. A Jew will always stride with the Jewish power structure to try to hurt my people," unquote.
Well, guys, I hate to cut it soon, but I do have to get going.
Oh, but we were just having so much fun.
I know. Maybe we could go back to the Canary Mine and find some more stuff.
The Canary Mine.
It is a gold mine.
Canary.
Yeah. You could go burn some coal.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what Destiny will be doing.
Well, I mean, his girlfriend will.
Yeah, and he'll eat the residue too.
Yeah, he'll justify it with some, like, long-winded
way to leave on face. Ending on a high note, as usual.
My name is Anglo. With me, I have Ink. I was going to call you Inglo. With Nike. With Inglo Nike.
Thank you for listening.
And then we have Kent Kershaw.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for joining us, Kent. Where can we find you?
You can find me at Kent Friendly on Twitter or on the forums. I'm just Kent.
He's a very friendly guy.
Very good.
Thank you for listening. If you want to give us young lads some help, send us some Bitcoin. Our BTC address is in the description. See you next week.